Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, lawmakers on the powerful Joint Finance Committee wrapped up their work on the next biennial budget, clearing the way for the legislature to approve it in the coming weeks.
This list of legislation is a key step forward.
The State Assembly sent 4 policing bills to Governor Tony Evers' desk, and 2 Assembly Republicans are pushing for an Arizona-style audit of the 2020 presidential election results in Wisconsin. Rewind, your week in review for June 18th.
I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week, the Joint Finance Committee wrapped up its work on the 2021-2023 biennial budget. GOP lawmakers, as part of their final votes, approved $3.4 billion in tax cuts over the next 2 years, the bulk of which, $2.7 billion approximately, would be spent on lowering one of the state's 4 tax brackets from 6.27% to 5.3%. That bracket applies to income between $23,930 and $263,480 for single filers. Legislators also voted earlier in the week to put another $129 million into expanding broadband, though $125 million of that would be covered through bonds. And lawmakers that same day, Tuesday, opted to pump $748.5 million into Medicaid and other health programs, efforts that matched some of what Governor Tony Evers had proposed. But Republicans declined to expand Medicaid coverage to address racial disparities in health care or cover services such as doulas, both of which Evers had called for. So 2 years ago, JR, in the vein of income taxes, right, we saw Republicans target the 2 lower brackets for their $450 million approximately cut. This year, you know, this session, things are a little bit different. What did they do this time around that differed from last time?
So remember, first thing, with income taxes, that your income is just because you make $100,000 versus $50,000 or $25,000, you all go through the brackets as your income rises. So these brackets are at 4 levels. So as you make your first X number of dollars, it's all taxed at one level. The next layer, then the next layer and up. 2 years ago, they lowered the lower 2 brackets. They want to now take this third bracket down almost a full point from 6.27 to 5.3. It doesn't have as wide an impact. The Fiscal Bureau during the debate yesterday said that it's about half of the filers in Wisconsin are going to have an impact, and that impact varies greatly between the people who are making $26,000 and the ones making $260,000. What's more, Democrats argue, look, for the amount of money you're putting into this third bracket to lower it by a point, you could eliminate the lowest bracket and impact everybody. Why are you doing this? Excuse for the wealthy. The Republican answer was, look, there is a small segment, or not small, but a minority of taxpayers in Wisconsin who pay the majority of the taxes. People have to have a tax burden to qualify for this latest tax cut. We took care of the lower 2 brackets last time. We need to do something broader as we kind of build the economy of this tax cut. That's why we did it this way. The big question is now, what will this do to Governor Evers and his view of the budget, right? Because this is the centerpiece of what Republicans did. They proposed lowering property taxes. They've increased spending here and there. They've done Medicaid, more Medicaid expansion, but not the expansion, how about put it that way? They only crossed off one red line for the governor, which is they did not do the Medicaid expansion, taking the federal money through the Federal Affordable Care Act to expand coverage. They funded education. Granted, they funded it to drive down property taxes. They didn't put any poison pills in there, and now they got a big tax cut. So what's Governor Evers going to do?
Right, and I think we have to remind folks that this action, especially this tax cut action, was all made possible because of the revenue re-estimate numbers that we got last week. Can you touch on those, Jared? Just re-summarize what we're looking at with $4.4 billion through mid-2023.
We already expected to have an ending balance in this fiscal year, June 30th, of $1.85 billion. They expected growth of about $1 billion more in the biennium. This is $4.4 billion on top of that. So this frees up all this money to do stuff. Now, the caveat was, though, to qualify for the federal money under the last 2 COVID-19 stimulus bills, you had to maintain your share of spending on schools and higher education. The state budget that the Finance Committee had been working on was short of that mark up until yesterday, which they drove money into the budget to meet that MOE, but it also was done solely to drive down property taxes. So Remember, for tech colleges and for K-12 schools, there's a formula. There's a cap on what you can spend. And with K-12, for example, that cap is per student. It's different district to district. The number's locked in years ago for many of these districts. But that cap says you get this much to spend per kid, and then we talk about most budgets of a per pupil increase. There's no per pupil increase in this budget. What they did was say, okay, you have this much in state aid, you have this much gap to raise property taxes. We're going to raise that state aid to lower that gap. You can raise property taxes because state law says, with your per pupil spending limit, whatever you don't have filled with state aid, you can fill it with property taxes. You don't have to, but most districts do. All the money put in drives down property taxes. Schools aren't spending more in state dollars, period. However, they are getting millions and millions in federal dollars. Now, Democrats want to separate those two out, so you can't combine the two. Republicans argue you can't ignore it. I mean, Milwaukee schools, between the three packages, like $800 million over a three-year period. That's more than they get in any state budget. I don't care how good that budget's been in Milwaukee schools. They don't get that much kind of money. The Democrats argue that's supposed to take care of these COVID expenses to kind of catch things up, to compensate for what's been going on. Republicans are like, no, you have to take into account. So now again, with Governor Evers, how's he view it? Because his thing is funding schools. They funded the schools, but to drive down property taxes. Does that make him satisfied? I mean, bet you money he'll say he's unhappy with it. The question is, will he sign it, knowing that if he doesn't sign this budget and vetoes it, they're not doing another one?
Exactly. I think that distinction is really important. Just because more money is going towards schools doesn't mean that school officials will actually see that state aid and be able to play with it. It's all going down towards buying down property taxes. But we'll get into that more a little bit in our next topic. Let's first hear more about this income tax cut. We'll go to Representatives Evan Goyke, who discusses this during the Joint Finance Committee hearing this week, and Representative Tony Kurtz.
Two people responsible for the economic recovery: Joe Biden pumping resources into our economy and Tony Evers distributing vaccines around our state. It's the reason I am speaking to you without a mask today. The reason why we're re-entering life as we knew it before COVID is because I got a vaccine. Because our state government functioned well under the leadership of Governor Evers and the leadership of President Biden, we rolled out vaccines. We were ahead of our neighboring states, and that has allowed us to regain our life as we knew it before COVID. That means economic activity, shopping, buying, eating, dining. The Fiscal Bureau, our nonpartisan arbiter here, has outlined for us on the June 8th memo the most important factors in the position we're in. Joe Biden and Tony Evers and the Republican legislatures on this committee, you guys fought those efforts. You wrote letters saying the federal government shouldn't spend additional money. You took Tony Evers to court, sued him multiple times over different containment measures. You don't get any credit for this.
Earlier, when somebody says it's wasting this money away, I will guarantee you, if I asked each one of these couples, they would say, I am not wasting money away. You know, people are talking about President Biden and President Trump and Tony Evers and how everybody did this great budget surplus that we did. You know who did this budget surplus? Wisconsin families. That's who owns and that's who did this budget surplus. And this proposal, this motion, is going to give some of that money back. Going to hold a little bit back to make sure we have a rainy day fund, and I totally support that, because inflation, recession, unfortunately, will be around the corner one day.
More on this proposed property tax reduction. So in all, the Republican plan would pump some $650 million into K-12 and tech colleges, as JR mentioned, to lower property tax levies in the next 2 years. And the move would also mean that the state would cover two-thirds of K-12 education costs in the next biennium. The action came after superintendents from the state's five largest school districts called on JFC leaders to act to secure this $2.3 billion in federal aid. As JR mentioned, from the latest COVID relief packages, including ARPA, the American Relief Plan Act. Lawmakers needed to spend about 35% of state aid on schools to get that federal money. JFC, though, initially only committed $128 million in new funding for K-12, jeopardizing it. Because the property taxes technically qualify as school spending, the state would meet the federal requirement under GOP lawmakers' budget plan. But there's something else to note, JR, about what how this sets us up for future bienniums. Can you get into that?
So basically, Republicans have been calling a buying down the levy. So that's property taxes with schools, technical colleges, the forestry tax that Governor Walker bragged about eliminating. What they're doing is they're using state tax dollars from sales, income, corporate, sin taxes. They're using that revenue to buy off property taxes, which is great as long as you have that general purpose revenue flowing into the coffers of the state. If that ever stops, you are in a bad situation because you've set yourself up where you are offsetting those property taxes. Remember those caps. If you can't meet this mark with your state tax dollars anymore and it drops, they can backfill that with property taxes. So your choices are this. Either allow a giant property tax cut or go into tech colleges and K-12 and say, you're going to spend less per student and actually cut school overall school spending. That's a difficult choice to make. Again, the GPR gravy train has been going on for a while in Wisconsin. It's been a good solid decade of growth. Numbers unlike anything I've seen. These numbers were juiced by ARPA. There's no two ways about it. I mean, look, Governor Evers and Democrats are going to claim that it's, you know, his stewardship and Joe Biden. Republicans claim a decade of their leadership has put us in position for this. The thing that's changed since January when fiscal breaking on the last revenue numbers were two things. COVID is getting better, right, because we've got fewer cases of vaccine, restrictions are loosening up, and the ARPA money. It's supercharging these revenue numbers. What happens when ARPA goes away, when that money runs out? Will the economy sustain itself? Are we looking at a situation where there could be a cliff 2 years from now? I have no idea. I mean, I'm not an economist. But what I can tell you is if we ever hit a situation where that those GPR dollars drop, now you got to make tough choices about where you prioritize a general purpose revenue or do you allow property taxes to go up?
Yeah, and I have two sort of broader step back questions for you. It struck me, Representative Evan Goyke, to sort of mark the end of JFC's work last night. He awarded his, let me read this off to make sure I have this correctly. He awarded Assembly Republicans his 2021-23 Caucus Cup. So basically, I'm curious if you agree with Representative Goyke that it's Assembly Republicans that won the biennium, the budget this biennium so far. You know, we don't know what Governor Evers is going to do yet. We don't have the floor votes finalized yet. But based on what you've seen from JFC, where do you think the caucuses are at?
Well, I had a buddy try to convince me to become a basketball referee after my coaching days were over, and I declined. So I'm going to pass on your question. Look, every budget, there's a little give and take. And so generally speaking, the rumblings I heard about behind closed doors are that Senate Republicans are a little more conservative on what they wanted to spend versus Assembly Republicans. And so there were some, not always, but sometimes there was some give and take there. But the remarkable thing is that this budget for, you know, the month-long process, there wasn't a whole lot of drama. They had three late starts, like significantly late starts, you know, like we waited for hours for them. That's not bad compared to most budgets I covered. There's no real policy in this budget. There's one provision that dings Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes for security costs. Otherwise, they avoided putting any policy in the budget. It went fairly smoothly and quickly, especially for having two brand new co-chairs in Mark Bourne, a representative from Beaver Dam, and Howard Markland, senator from Spring Green. All in all, I mean, even Democrats said it kind of went smoothly.
And new Senate Republican leadership, too, right, mm-hmm. in Devin Lemahue. So really smooth process so far, right?
So far, you know, and it's still a budget. There are still hiccups. But all in all, I mean, there's a process where you align by line with the budget, and they produce papers on these and do motions. They went to what are called their omnibus motions. So basically took an entire agency oftentimes. They'd been one motion, but then do like a dozen. It sped up the process, and it made it go smoother. Now, it means fewer speeches for Democrats. Also, there's less highlighting of some things for the media. But it did definitely speed the process up and make things a little smoother.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I think we do have to sort of set the scene for the timeline going forward, right? At the end of the month, we're expecting to see the Assembly and the Senate come in, pass the budget, get it to Evers by the beginning of July. Anything that you're watching for in the coming weeks with that?
So who's going to come in first, or they do at the same time? So the Senate's been telling members, keep June 30th open. Remember, the fiscal year ends June 30th. Republicans don't want to be quote-unquote late. Remember, there's no actual deadline to pass a new budget. It's not like the federal government where things shut down, there's no budget. If June 30th goes from 11:59 p.m. to 12 a.m. on July 1st, government operates as is. Nothing changes. But there's a kind of a psychological deadline, right? So if the Senate's going to vote on the 30th, kind of the bet is the assembly either go the day before, 2 days before, or go the same day. I asked Speaker Robin Voss what are the options. He's like, well, go before, go after. Like, go the same time? Yes. But the guess is they're not going to go after, because that means you're next fiscal year. So watch for the assembly vote Monday, Tuesday that week. Maybe they go the same time, which is fine, because if you think about it, if they go the same time, all you do is you, like, whoever gets done first, message the bill the other house, and they swap out that version for what they're working on, and away you go. So.
Exactly. Well, we'll keep an eye on that in the coming weeks. And we'll move on now to cover the assembly's floor session votes this week. The assembly sent four policing bills to Governor Tony Evers' desk after convening on Tuesday. The four bills were among a host of police overhaul efforts that passed the chamber. That includes measures to largely ban the police use of chokeholds, require law enforcement to publish use of force data online, require DOJ to collect data and publish an annual report on use of force incidents, and lastly, compel DOJ, the Department of Justice, to distribute community policing grant dollars to communities. Lawmakers also passed legislation to ban transgender student athletes from playing girls or women's sports, bar businesses and government entities from requiring so-called vaccine passports, and push back the local redistricting timeline. On policing, Evers this week urged lawmakers to send those four bills to him very, very quickly, and also sort of work through the other bills a bit more quickly as well. He said the bills are, quote, a step, but added, quote, we must take the next step and the next if we're going to continue making meaningful progress toward a more just, more equitable, and safer state for everyone. The Assembly is planning on returning this week, this coming week, Tuesday, to vote on legislation to define the use of force, which is a definition that sort of got heated during the Racial Disparities Task Force work on this. And that would be for police policies and also requiring officers to report colleagues who use excessive force. There's some, you know, that bill had already passed the state Senate on a 30-2 vote. There's some sort of behind-the-scenes, last-minute amendment work happening. What happened with the police association? And
so Jim Steinke, the assembly minority leader, told us that the Milwaukee Police Association had concerns about some language. He didn't really give us a lot of specifics. He said things like they want an effective date a little in the future to give them time to get used to this, to kind of prepare for it. We don't see the language. And the reality was this bill was done on a bipartisan basis and had buy-in from people like Sheila Stubbs, a black lawmaker from Madison who was co-chair of that disparities committee with Steinke. If they tried to ram it through without buy-in from Democrats, it would kind of, I don't say spoil, but it would definitely put a less pleasant tone, I guess, to the work that was done in this bill. There are more police bills to come. I don't know the ones that Governor Evers wants. For example, one coming down the pipe would penalize communities who cut their spending on law enforcement. That's not going to be a winner with Governor Evers, probably. But there are more police bills to come. I just don't know he's going to get the wins that he wants on legislation.
Yeah, and let's hear now from Representative Stubbs, who, as you mentioned, co-chaired the task force with Majority Leader Jim Steinke. They both spoke on the floor about these bills this week.
Black Wisconsinites make up 7% of the population, but 44% of the prison population. The black four-year high school graduation rate is 22.5% lower than the white graduation rate. Wisconsin is the worst state to raise a black family. These facts are shameful, unacceptable, and our community deserves better. This list of legislation is a key step forward. It is the floor. It is basic. It is not progressive. It is basic reforms. These are good bills for our community. Together with bipartisan support, we are going to bring the key legislation to Governor Evers' desk.
We didn't just put our stamp of approval on legislation that was already out there. Like I said, we asked for changes to that legislation. We came out with brand new legislation. And I know our friends on the other side of the task force on economic development and education, their work continues. And I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that subcommittee, because more so than anything else, we need to help lift people out of poverty and access to a great education and access to economic development opportunities. Not everybody got everything that they wanted. Some people feel like the bills could go further. Some people feel like the bills go too far. None of this was about being anti-law enforcement or about being anti-community. It was about trying to set a tone for people to come together, to find consensus around really tough issues.
Two Wisconsin Republicans are pushing for an Arizona-style audit of Wisconsin's 2020 fall election. Representatives Janelle Branchon and Dave Murphy, who both visited Arizona to witness the much-criticized ballot audit, have called for the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau to incorporate a similar review in Wisconsin as part of its ongoing review. In Arizona, the partisan audit of Maricopa County's 2.1 million ballots was approved by Republicans in the state Senate. The caucus previously took possession of the ballots and election machines via subpoena, even though a previous audit said it found no issues with the election results. In all, four GOP lawmakers from Wisconsin made the trip to Arizona. It was paid for by Voices and Votes, a nonprofit group led by correspondents with the conservative One America News Network. Wisconsin Republican lawmakers did launch the LAB audit in February, though it will take months to complete the process. I think we're looking at fall right now for a completion date.
Yep.
And the Assembly Campaigns and Elections Committee, of which Branchon is the chair, is also reviewing the fall 2020 election. Meanwhile, Speaker Voss has hired three former law enforcement officers to review the election as well. Wisconsin lawmakers, I should mention, weren't the only ones to visit Arizona. We also saw lawmakers from Pennsylvania and Georgia. But, you know, sort of focusing back on Wisconsin, it's unclear whether LAB has the authority to incorporate this kind of review. Do you have any insight on that?
Well, that's what Representative Branchon told me. I asked her if she wanted to see something like this in Wisconsin. She said she did, but wasn't sure if LAB had the power to do it. Now, ballots are an open record, actually, under state law. Under federal law, you have to maintain a ballot for 22 months after a federal election. It's a shorter period of time for a state election only. So in theory, you can look at them. I just don't know if LAB has the power or the technology or what not to do this, because they're doing things like taking these high-powered pictures of the ballots to look for all kinds of things, various conspiracy theories and that whatnot. Interesting note that Dave Murphy also went. There were four lawmakers who went. I talked to Dave Murphy as well. He complained that this audit in Arizona is getting a bad rap from the media, he says. He also went on a radio show and kind of knocked Speaker Voss for not really embracing this a little bit more, that he was foolish to do so. Speaker Voss did not really embrace that call from Dave Murphy or comment about that. But, like, this all goes back to the fact that Republicans, there's still a part of the base that is really hung up on the idea that something went awry in November, and they want to get at it. They want to know what is going on. How do we fix this? There's also the conspiracy theory that Donald Trump will be reinstalled as president in August. Not going to happen, by the way, unless you're wondering that at home. There's no way to overturn the Wisconsin election results that I'm aware of. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm pretty sure we're set cut and dried in Wisconsin. The question here is, what's this do to debate going forward? Robin Voss said at one time that this all was about trying to convince Tony Evers to sign these bills that they're doing. That's not going to happen. Governor Evers has made clear he's not going to sign these election bills coming down the pipe. It just really cues up what's at stake next fall. Possibly Republicans take unified control of the government again, what they would do in Wisconsin. Now, the stakes get higher when it really is a possibility versus knowing the government's going to veto it. But it kind of shows you that what could happen depending on next fall, election laws in Wisconsin.
Yep, and what will happen with the LAB audit, too. And I'd imagine for something like this, the standing committee would have to direct LAB. I mean, again, I'm just speculating here. I don't know what exactly this process would look like. But there would have to be some legislative directive, I'm assuming, of LAB to do this, incorporate this as part of the investigation. And I just don't know, outside of these four lawmakers, if there's any interest in that.
And just think, I mean, some of the things I heard is, imagine bringing Arizona style, like anytime you bring in the Arizona angle, you know what you're doing here, it adds a certain element that may not be very positive light for what's going on. I mean, there's already criticism of what Republicans are doing in Wisconsin, period. If you add looking for fibers and, you know, those kinds of things with high-powered cameras, it might not really inspire confidence about what you're trying to do. So that's something to think about.
Very true. All right, let's move on to stocks. What's rising this week, JR?
So William Penterman, so former legislative aide, ran for the 37th Assembly District, eked out a 16-vote lead on Tuesday night. The canvasses finished this morning, just before he came on the air. No change. Jennifer Meinhardt told us originally on Tuesday that she's looking at a recount. Only thing on her mind. Here's the caveat. Under Wisconsin law, there are certain rules about who can request a recount and what the margin has to be. If it's fewer than 4,000 votes, and there were 3,826 cast in this one, the margin has to be 9 votes or less. Otherwise, you have to pay a fee for the recount. Mm-hmm. 16 seems like a very small margin. But the reality is, in a recount, all you do is take the ballots and feed them back to the machine, and your best bet is to find a mistake in the canvas. Numbers were transposed on election night, or somebody wrote down something incorrectly. The canvas has found the same margin. pretty much puts a nail in that coffin. Meinhardt told us today she agrees that Penderman's trying to move on and go toward the general election, so he's moved away from this. And now Nick is set up, or William is sent up to run in the July 13th special for the seat, which Trump won with 54% of the vote in November, so he'll be the heavy favorite in that race.
Yeah, and there's a Democratic and an independent yes. candidate also on that ballot.
Independent got like 3% of the vote in November, possibly less than that, a couple points. So you know, it might impact it somewhat, but I think the Republicans are favored mm-hmm. in that seat.
And what's mixed this week?
The personal property tax. So in theory, the budget that Joint Finance approved would do away with the personal property tax, which is applied to business equipment. So if you're a restaurant, you buy an oven, you pay a tax, property tax on that oven over time, right? Republicans have complained about this for years and wanted to find a way to get rid of it. The caveat has been you have to, in their minds, back for the lost property tax revenue. Because if you take that much money off the rolls, what happens is homeowners pick up the tab. You don't want to do that if you're a smart politician. So the backfill will be a couple hundred million dollars, and lo and behold, the Joint Finance budget, enters Thursday night, includes $203 million in change to backfill the lost revenue of personal property tax. The hitch is it doesn't actually repeal the personal property tax. You have to have trailer legislation to repeal the personal property tax. Now, that is unusual to say the least. But the thinking I pick up is Republicans know it could be a tough sell with Evers to do this. They took the money to backfill that lost property tax revenue and put it in the Joint Finance Supplemental Appropriation. That's kind of key because the governor can't veto that money out of the Supplemental Appropriation, as far as I know, so we can't move it somewhere else or have it lapse the general fund. The question, though, is can they get him to sign a bill to approve the tax repeal? I mean, and I get the argument that there's maybe a little bit better chance of separating him so that the money's not tied to it, he can't play with it. Because if you put a separate bill all by itself, he could rework the language. Because remember, the partial veto can only be used in a spending bill. So the language of the repeal would not have spending in it. He couldn't touch the language. In the budget, he can't. So maybe that's the thinking. But it's going to be interesting if they can get Evers to actually sign that thing. And I don't. Last night, John Rippenbach, who's a Democratic senator, raised some questions if they could, so we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Absolutely. And what's falling this week, Jared?
So Motion 999. It's infamous. I know nobody home knows what this thing is, but the last motion, or second last motion, the last motion is actually like, here's how to draft this budget, the Fiscal Bureau, and here's what we want you to do. The second last motion is called 999. It is the catch-all. It does include everything from exempting the legislature from open records laws to provisions for road builders on aggregate. I mean, like, it is a catch-all. Bail bonds come up often in the Motion 999. It is a document chock full of policy. It's the last kick at the cat in the budget. Get your preferred project. And so lobbyists salivate over Motion 999. It was a dud this time. There's no policy in there, no big drama, which is what Republicans told us all along. They're not putting policy in the budget. Like I said earlier, is that one provision about Manila Barnes and security. But there's just not a lot of policy in it because they know the more policy you put in, the more Evers can work his veto magic and change things the way you don't want it to be. So Motion 99 has the money to meet the maintenance of effort, so they put the money for schools in there. They have a provision to put $60 million per year in the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. Because we had high unemployment last year, there was a big draw on that fund. When it hits a certain level, there is then a new tax schedule for employers in Wisconsin. Putting the money in, Republicans hope will put off that new schedule that goes higher. It's higher cost for businesses. There are smaller things like there's a very small provision in state law that says you cannot pass a bill if in the second year of a biennium the expenditures exceed revenues. All you have to do, though, is put a provision that says notwithstanding this law, we can pass bills. They put that in there. So it was just there wasn't any drama, and it really kind of goes with this budget in general. There's not a lot of drama in it. There wasn't a lot of policy, or really any policy. Goes back to that question. Well, one, we got to see how it fares in the state Senate. You know, there'll be some grumbling in there. But assuming it passes as is from the legislature, what's Governor Evers going to do? And I think the bet is he's going to sign it. I had a Democrat tell me this is not a bad budget. You know, of course, this was off the record, you know, not off the record, but, you know, not for attribution. Yeah. But it was, this is not a bad budget because there's no poison pills. There's no, they could have messed with the Attorney General's office, for example. They could have done all kinds of stuff. They didn't. They basically took current law, sprinkled some more money in, and then drove down property taxes and had a big income tax cut. So what's Evers going to do? His red lines, expand Medicaid. Long as Robin Voss is Speaker, that's not going to happen. Invest in schools. They invest, but not the way he wants them to. They met the maintenance of effort for the federal money. So, you know, I get Evers didn't get medical marijuana. They didn't get recreational marijuana. They didn't get, like, some of the tax hikes you want. I mean, there are things, juvenile justice, you know, closing Lincoln Hills and Copperleaf. There are things he wants he's not going to get. But overall, it's a lot like the budget he signed 2 years ago with more money in it and a bigger tax cut. So what's he going to do? I think the Fed is going to sign it. You can make an argument if you're Evers about why to veto it. But if you're going to reelection and you've got all these good things in there, how do you pull that off? Because you know Republicans will not pass on the budget. I've been told that by Republicans over and over. This is our one shot. If he vetoes it, we're not passing on it. Because there are some conservatives who are like, we would be happy to keep current spending as is, let all that money build up in the general fund. And if there's a governor, Republican governor in 2023, we got a pile of cash to play with. Not every Republican says that, but there are definitely some who feel that way. Also, they say, look, if he vetoes the budget, now it's on him on maintenance of effort. Because remember, putting that money in is what gives us maintenance effort. If we don't have that, I don't think we meet it with current law, so that would be an issue for him.
Yeah, and as you said, no drama thus far. Maybe drama in the coming weeks. We'll have to keep an eye on it. Thanks so much for joining me, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for June 18.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.